Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. As we've been reporting this hour, Boston bombing suspect Jahar Tsarnaev is being arraigned in federal court. He has just entered the courtroom wearing an orange jumpsuit. This is his first public appearance since the April 15th bombing attacks that killed three people and wounded more than 260. Tsarnaev is charged with using a weapon of mass destruction and could face the death penalty.
Now, we're seeing that the judge in the courtroom has also just read into the record that 30 victims and family members of victims of the bombing are also in the courtroom. We'll have an update from the federal courthouse in Boston later this hour. But first, we're going to spend some time looking at the details of the case, and specifically the challenge of defending a terrorism suspect, someone who's accused of such an appalling crime that so many people witnessed and for which there is so much evidence of guilt.
So joining us now is Nancy Gertner. She's a professor at Harvard Law School. She's also a former defense attorney and a former federal judge for the District of Massachusetts. And Nancy Gertner, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's very good to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us is Stephen Jones. He's a defense attorney in Oklahoma who represented the Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. And Stephen Jones, thank you for joining us. It's good to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
And listeners, you can join the conversations as Jahar Tsarnaev is being arraigned today. This case is moving forward. What questions do you have about this upcoming trial, about the case itself? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We've got two very knowledgeable experts here with a lot to say about this. Nancy Gertner, I'll start with you. I'd like to talk a little bit about the team that's defending Jahar Tsarnaev. He's going to be defended by Miriam Conrad, who heads the Federal Public Defender Office in Boston. She's known as a very experienced attorney. She defended Richard Reed, the so-called shoe bomber who tried to blow up a jetliner en route to U.S. from Paris. What do we know about Miriam Conrad? What can you tell us?
She's the best. She appeared before me many times. There isn't a better lawyer that I know on either the public defender or private lawyer. She is superb, well-prepared, very smart, and she is enormously respected by the judges and I think by the U.S. attorneys as well. So she's a wonderful choice for this.
You know, Nancy and Stephen, I wanted to talk to you both about this idea of defending clients in very high-profile cases and difficult cases and cases that make these clients extremely unpopular in the public's view. Nancy, I know, for example, you represented Susan Sachs, an anti-war activist who was tried for a role in a bank robbery that led to the murder of a Boston police officer. And Stephen, as we mentioned, you represented the Oklahoma City bomber, Stephen McVeigh. So what goes through your mind, and I'll come to you, Stephen, first, in terms of preparing a case like this? What's the first challenge?
Well, the first challenge, frankly, is to take time to think. I've always been grateful for the Oklahoma City federal judges in that they called me on a Friday night, so I had the weekend to think about what I might do, how I would present myself, what questions would be appropriate to ask, what should we do about the publicity, the bomb building was still standing. So it wasn't announced until Monday. And so I had 48 hours of very precious time to think and then to start building a team. And each case, of course, is different. Each tub sits on its own bottom. So the circumstances will differ. However, the consistent factor is to try to control the evidence and to try to find out as much as you can on any subject or object or person that may be of interest to either the government or to yourself. And I agree with the judge that the federal public defender in Boston has a very good reputation and they will have adequate financial resources to do what they must do.
Well, you mentioned the evidence, and in a case like this, there seems to be so much evidence. I mean, does the public defender actually take issue with the evidence in a case like this?
You have to. I mean, I think that the first answer to how one prepares for particularly a case where it could be a death penalty is do everything. I mean, just do everything. And the everything then is complicated, certainly, by the kind of coverage in this case, but that's a different matter. How do you deal then with the press, and how do you select a jury under these circumstances? But looking at the evidence, you look at everything. Is there a challenge to the statement that Tsarnaev made? What were the circumstances of that? What was the circumstance of that statement? Are there legal issues?
For example, he made statements before the Miranda rights were read to him. Is that what you're referring to?
That's right. There are special exceptions for Miranda. Did this really fit within that? Did the special exceptions cover the period of time during which he was questioned? There are legal issues, there are factual issues, and the charge, you know, in this country is to represent everyone, no matter how overwhelming the evidence may be.
Well, I want to get back to this question of the evidence, which appears so overwhelming, and it seems like one of the problems is the evidence seems to be something that even the public feels they understand and saw, because so much of this sort of unfolded on TV screens for a week there. Stephen Jones, you mentioned one of the issues, or I think Nancy did, but let me come to you about this question, and that is about publicity. Does that, for instance, suggest the need for a change of venue? Is that something that a defense attorney would do in this case?
Well, publicity alone will not get you a change of venue. It's more than that, because in a modern world with communications, we assume people watch television and read newspapers and get information from the Internet. But sometimes a change of venue, while occasionally granted in the federal courts, and in fact we were successful, the question is, are you better where you are than where you might be? You have to change a venue. You don't really know where it will end up. Could end up in another district in the First Circuit. Could end up outside the First Circuit. So my guess is that the defendant, at least initially, and I don't want to question some other lawyer's judgment about a case that I know very little on, is, should they move out of the District of Massachusetts? Massachusetts is one district, or at least it was. I assume still is.
Yeah, it is.
It's a fairly good-sized state. So you could try a case that had a lot of attention in Boston or Cambridge that might have minimal attention in Williamstown or Springfield or other places. I mean, it's always going to have some attention. Sometimes you can make that work for you. But, and not to make too big a point about this, one needs to remember that Jack Ruby, who was seen by hundreds of millions of people shooting and killing Lee Harvey Oswald, was convicted, but his conviction was overturned on appeal. And he died an innocent man in the sense that he had not been retried, but the defense was always ready for opportunities that would embarrass the state's case, so no case can be, as I've said, there's no case that can't be won and no case that can't be lost.
Nancy, I wanted to ask you about, well, actually, it's what Stephen Jones just said was so interesting and provocative. Let me just get you to respond to that, first of all.
Well, the issue of publicity now cuts across almost all cases, but particularly in a case like this.
Yeah.
In other words, it's no longer three or four articles in the Globe or the Herald. It's now saturation publicity in any case all the time. So everyone has to deal with that. The court has to deal with that by a sophisticated, careful jury selection process. I mean, the kind of questioning of jurors that is intended to actually find out what they think, as opposed to what often happens in Massachusetts, which is the questioning of jurors in a fairly perfunctory way. The change of venue question is complicated. Boston is Massachusetts is an anti-death penalty state. We don't have a death penalty. This is a state that, is known for its liberal attitudes. And so the question, it's a strategic question that the lawyer has to do, which is whether or not to go somewhere else with a different kind of jury pool, different kind of attitudes, or stay within Massachusetts. This case is a little different than most, since it's not only saturation publicity. The press, and in some sense the alleged crime, was directed at Boston.
Sure.
There's a way in which I'm reminded I tried a case involving a white supremacist who was going to charge with attempting to blow up the Zakim Bridge and the NAACP headquarters, anti-Jewish, anti-black. And the question was, could you have jurors who were Jewish or jurors who were black when they were the victims of his crime? Likewise, there's a way in which this city and to a lesser degree this state was the victim of the alleged crime. And so it's an open question. On the one hand, do you stay here knowing how remarkable this state is with respect to the attitudes to the death penalty and liberal attitudes generally? Or do you move it because of the unique nature of the crime?
Listeners, we're talking to Nancy Gertner, professor at Harvard Law School, and Stephen Jones, a criminal defense attorney in Enid, Oklahoma. And we're talking about the case against Yahar Tsarnaev, who is being arraigned today. If you have questions, you can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we have this update from WBUR reporter Asma Khalid, who's been tweeting from the Moakley courthouse that marathon bombing defendant Yahar Tsarnaev stood up in court and responded to all of the charges read out against him, loudly proclaiming not guilty. The judge in the courtroom asked for Tsarnaev to respond to the charges himself rather than through his lawyers. The hearing has just ended, and we'll have more from reporter Asma Khalid in just a few minutes. Nancy and Stephen, let me ask you about this question of sort of the sort of ultimate end game here. I mean, of course, we mentioned that Tsarnaev could be facing the death penalty. It seems hard to imagine that he won't be convicted of something, but is that the ultimate goal here of a defense attorney, to save his life, essentially? Stephen Jones, let me come to you.
Well, yes, of course. The defense has the obligation to, and should, defend him vigorously. I agree with the judge on that, so that nothing is seen to be taken from him, neither his life nor his liberty, except by due process of law. Within the death penalty effort itself, if the government decides, after the Attorney General approves seeking the death penalty, many death penalty lawyers who are abolitionists more or less weigh the first stage of the proceeding and put all of the emphasis on the second stage. I have not seen that very successful. I think you yield too much that might later bear fruit if you sort of give up the game to begin with and concentrate on the punishment. But while we're talking about the punishment, a death penalty imposed in Massachusetts may be a bridge too far. I agree with everything that the judge said about Massachusetts. It's the intellectual capital of the world. It's a very, or certainly of the United States. It's a state that the only state that George McGovern carried.
That's
it,
right.
Has a tradition of liberalism,
right?
And it has a diversified population.
Yeah,
so it may be that the best thing for him is to try his case, certainly the death penalty portion in Massachusetts, because there are a number of mitigating factors, and you also have to remember the subject of arithmetic. It takes all 12 to find him guilty. It only takes one to hold out and hold out to the very end against the death penalty, and the punishment is life. Those odds favor the defense in almost any environment. It needs to be remembered that in Terry Nichols' state trial, he was Mr. McVeigh's co-defendant, that he was found guilty of first-degree murder of 160 people, including 19 children under the age of 6, in what was the largest mass murder then in American history, and he received life in prison from an Oklahoma jury in the southeastern part of the state.
Yeah. Nancy Gertner, what's the first step that the defense attorneys do? In other words, it's the Attorney General's decision of whether to seek the federal death penalty. Even before the trial, can the attorneys go to the Attorney General and make the case to him why this shouldn't be a death penalty case?
There is a special procedure for the federal death penalty which allows the public defenders to go and talk to Attorney General Holder to talk about whether or not this should be a death penalty or not. Clearly, they have indicted on death-eligible counts, But the defenders, I imagine, will be talking to the Attorney General about Mr. Tsarnaev's age, 19. The Supreme Court has now prohibited the death penalty with respect to anyone under the age of 18. So he is now slightly over that, should someone 19 get the death penalty. They certainly will make a point about his relationship with his brother.
Mm-hmm.
In the Washington sniper case, for example, I don't believe that the younger participant was even, that there were, the death penalty was even sought as to him. So they would be making those kinds of arguments. The government will surely argue about the brutality of the offense and the numbers of victims, et cetera, and all this will go to the Attorney General to make a decision. And I might add that again, figuring into this is a death penalty, federal death penalty in a non-death penalty state. What does that mean?
Mm.
When I tried a death penalty case as a judge, there were really fairly large numbers of jurors in the jury pool who didn't want to be involved in a death penalty case. How easy will it be to select a jury here?
Interesting. We're talking about the upcoming case against Jahar Tsarnaev with Nancy Gertner and Stephen Jones. The number is 800-423-TALK. That's 800-423-8255. Let's go to Ryan, who's calling from Pembroke. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes. I'm pretty naive to the subject, so I just have a question regarding the jurisdiction of the case. Now, what constitutes this crime being a federal offense? Is it just because of the bombing or the number of victims or what?
Ryan, it's a good question. Let's let Nancy Gertner take that.
The reason there is a federal death penalty under the use of a weapon of mass destruction causing death, there is a federal death penalty available for the use of a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence causing death. In other words, there are specific federal statutes for which we have a federal death penalty. There's no analog in the Massachusetts statutes because we don't have a death penalty in Massachusetts. But there's a federal death penalty. And so they indict specifically under those charges that enable a death penalty.
Ryan, thanks for that call. Stephen Jones, before we heard Ryan's question, Nancy Gertner was talking about mitigating factors like his age, for example. Was he under the influence of his brother? Does that get to the idea that, so maybe, yes, he was involved, but the question is, how involved was he in this? Is that a mitigating factor or a question that is pertinent in this case?
It is pertinent, and the defense has available to it Judy Clark, who is an expert in death penalty cases from the defense standpoint and who has had remarkable success. She represented the Unabomber, and he received a life. She represented the young man that was accused of killing a federal judge and several other individuals, including a 9-year-old girl, and seriously wounding a federal congressman, and persuaded the government to accept a life sentence. So the defense is very talented here, and there are a number of issues. Diminished responsibility, his age, the judge makes the point, he barely is death eligible under any circumstances since he's only 19. And jurors, no matter often what they read or what they think, when they enter a courtroom, they take that oath, they sit there, they realize that they are part of living history, and they want to not only be fair, but to be perceived as being fair. And I frankly think that the government has an uphill battle on the death penalty. They probably will seek it if for no other reason than that's what's expected. But it may well be that the matter will never come to trial, that some negotiated settlement will be reached. And this young man appears to have acted in part, if he in fact is guilty, on political consciousness and grievances that apparently he sincerely felt. And that, again, is a factor that will weigh in some people's mind.
Hmm.
So it's not going to be easy for the government.
Yeah. Nancy Gertner, you know, is there any basis here for some kind of a plea deal for defense attorneys to propose?
It's hard to say in the abstract, but surely one kind of plea would be a plea to save his life. You know, that we're not even close to that now, but certainly a plea that would save his life. You know, there are a number of actors here that have to act with some courage. So if the Attorney General declines the death penalty, that would be a very courageous decision and would be against certainly the political pressure. If he then decides to basically abide by the political pressure, then, you know, negotiations would be about saving this young man's life. There's no question about it.
Let's go to a question from one of our callers. Lee is calling from Smithfield, Rhode Island. Hi, Lee, you're on the air.
Am I speaking?
Yes, you're on the air. You're on the air, Lee.
Hi, very interesting discussion. I thought this might be usefully directed to Judge Gertner. Why, in this case, did the judge at the trial have Tsarnaev answer the charges, his pleading to the charges himself, and not his lawyer, which might suggest that if he pleaded guilty, that it might shortcut a perhaps very long and expensive trial? And the second question would be, why did you read into the record that the victims of the bombing were at court, which might seem prejudicial to an impartial hearing, a form of allocution?
Lee, there are two great questions. Let me ask Nancy Gertner.
It's not possible to enter a plea of guilty at an arraignment to a potential death penalty. Judge wouldn't accept it, unless it was part of a considered plea bargain. So it's not available at this point for him to enter a guilty plea. Mm. Not guilty is the only plea here. The question that you raised is a very important one. There is absolutely no reason why the judge couldn't have turned to the lawyers and said, I take it, this is a not guilty to each and every one of the charges. There was absolutely no need for Mr. Tsarnaev to speak. And if you ask me, it's a bit of theater. The reporting, to enable the reporting that he spoke and said not guilty. It is absolutely unnecessary.
And Lee's, the second part of Lee's question, why the judge might have read into the record that the victims of the bombing were at the court, is that also, in your view, a bit of theater?
Well, there are rights that victims have to be notified of the various proceedings. And so to some degree, she could have been complying, the magistrate judge could have been complying with the statute that says the victims have been informed and they are here. Whether you had to go into detail about the numbers of victims there, that's a whole other question. But they certainly have rights to be notified of the proceeding and to attend if they choose to. You know, the issue here is the way that you do it.
Sure.
And that, it seems to me, is a different question.
Well, a fascinating case. Thank you both for getting us started today. Nancy Gertner, professor at Harvard Law School. She's a former federal judge for the District of Massachusetts. And Stephen Jones, a criminal defense attorney in Enid, Oklahoma. He represented the Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, as we've been reporting, Jahar Tsarnaev has been arraigned in federal court in South Boston. WBR's Deborah Becker was there, and she joins us now. Deb, we just heard Anthony reiterate that the judge asked Tsarnaev to enter his own pleas using his own voice. He pleaded not guilty to all counts against him. What was he like? What did he look like? What was his demeanor like?
Well, it was interesting. He did answer loudly into the microphone in accented English. He pleaded not guilty 7 times. The entire proceeding took about 10 minutes. He came out in an orange jumpsuit, obviously from the Fort Devens Federal Medical Correctional Facility, where he's been held since April, and he appeared very healthy. He looked very young. He came in handcuffs. They took them off, sat him down at the table with his defense attorneys, and then he got up and formally entered the pleas, occasionally glanced back at some of his family members who were in the courtroom and smiled at them. He seemed very healthy, actually. There were about 10 members of his family in the courtroom today, apparently with legal counsel.
And Deb, I'm seeing that the prosecution indicated how long the trial might take when it gets underway. What do we know about that?
Well, the prosecution said that it expects to call 80 to 100 witnesses in this case, and the trial would take months. essentially. And the judge did ask the prosecution to try to put together some sort of a budget as to what they expect this is going to be in terms of time and in terms of cost.
Mm, and I see, yeah, the 3 to 4 months, and you said 80 to 100 witnesses. Possibly his next appearance might be sometime in late September. Deb, in the last couple seconds that we have here, family members and victims themselves of the bombing were in the courtroom as well today. What was the mood on that side of the room?
The mood was very somber and tense, I would say, all the way around. I think that there's not anyone who was in the room who doesn't think that this was a tragedy in one form or another, depending on which side they were sitting on. There were about 30 victims in the room. They seemed obviously very sad, very saddened by what's happened to their lives. And then, of course, there were the family members of Zahar who were openly weeping.
WBUR's Deborah Becker in federal court today, witnessing the arraignment of suspected marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. Deb, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And I should note that right next door to where the arraignment happened was the trial of James Whitey Bulger. So a big day at Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.